want to share with you an adaptation of Willa Cather's short story entitled The Burglar's Christmas. Two very shabby-looking young men stood at the corner of Prairie Avenue and 180th Street, looking despondently as the carriages whirled by. It was Christmas Eve, and the streets were full of vehicles, florist wagons and grocers' carts and carriages of all sorts. The streets were in that half-liquid, half-congealed condition peculiar to the streets of Chicago this season of the year. The swift wheels that spun sometimes through slush of mud and snow all over the two men who were talking on the corner. "Well," remarked the older of the two, "I guess we're at our rope's end. How are you feeling?" Pretty shaky. The wind's sharp tonight. If I'd had anything to eat, I might not mind it so much. Got anything left you can hawk?" "Nothing but my beard, and I'm afraid they wouldn't find it worth a pawn ticket," said the younger one as he rubbed the weak old stubble on his face. "Got any folks anywhere? Now's your time to hit them up if you have." "Never mind if I have. They are out of the question." "Well, you'll be out of it before too long if you don't make a move of some sort. A man's got to eat. I'm going down to Longton's Saloon. I used to play the banjo there, and I'll see if they can get me a free meal." "You better come along. Perhaps they can get up enough food for two of us." "Nah, no thanks. I don't feel up to it. I'll just loaf around here." "You sure? I don't like leaving you alone. You shouldn't be alone tonight." "Don't worry about me. You go along." And so his friend turned and slowly went up the avenue. He was miserable enough to want to be quite alone. Even the crowd that jostled by annoyed him. He wanted space to think. He had avoided this for a year. Now he had laughed it off or drunk it off. But hunger is a powerful incentive to introspection. This was not the first time he had been hungry or desperate and alone. But always before, there had been something to look forward to, but not tonight. The reality was that he had failed in everything. He was only 24 years old and had already struck out on his own. And this was what he had made of it. He could remember the hopeful things they used to say about him at college in the old days before he had cut away to try to live by his own wits. But since then, he had never touched an enterprise that had not eventually failed. Or if it had survived his connection with it, had left him behind. His last venture had been with some 10-cent specialty company that had gone to pieces in Buffalo. And it was after that that he had worked his way to Chicago. As he stood there in the wet under the streetlight, he decided that the world had treated him as well as he deserved. He used to blame others for his mishaps, but he was well beyond that now. Tonight was his birthday, too. There seemed something particularly amusing in that. He turned up his coat collar a little to keep the chill away from his throat and began to remember all the birthday parties that he used to have, which then only took his mind to food and his present lack of it. His cold hands clenched angrily, and for a moment he felt that bitter hatred of wealth, of ease, of everything that is well-fed and well-housed that starving men feel. After all, he had a right to eat. He had demanded great things from the world once, fame and wealth and admiration, and now all he wanted was some bread. He looked around quickly and felt a new energy. In all his hard times, he had never stolen anything before. He was above that. But now, he figured he might as well. After all, he'd probably fail at that too, and then he could add it to his long list: failure as a journalist, failure as a lecturer, failure as a businessman, failure as a thief. Just then, a carriage drove up to the house he was standing in front of, and several richly dressed women got out and went in. The front door was open, and he could see down the hallway and up the stairs. The servant had left the door open and gone in with the guests. The first floor was all lighted, but upstairs, those windows were all dark. It looked very easy just to slip upstairs to the darkened rooms where all the jewels and trinkets are. He entered quickly. Instinctively, he removed his muddy cap as he moved quickly and quietly up the staircase. He met no one on the stairs or in the upper hallway. He entered a bedroom quickly and closed the door behind him. The light from the hallway shone in through the transom. The room was furnished richly enough to justify his expectations. He went to the dresser. A number of rings and pieces of jewelry lay in a silver tray. He put them in his pockets quickly. He opened the top drawer and found, as he had expected, several jewelry cases. He opened them. A lady's watch and a pair of old-fashioned bracelets. He seemed to dimly remember seeing them, something like them, before. But no matter. Suddenly, the door opened, and a woman stood in the doorway. She was tall with white hair and wearing an evening dress. The light from the hall streamed in upon him, but she was not afraid. She stood looking at him for a moment, and then she ran to him and threw her arms around him. "Willie, Willie, is it you?" He struggled to get free from her embrace. "Mother, Mother, you must not. You don't understand. Oh, this is the worst. Oh, my son, we have waited so long. We have waited so long for you to come home. You don't understand. I did not know you were here. I came here to rob. It's the first time ever, I swear it. I'm just a common thief. Look, my pockets are full of your jewelry. Can't you hear me? I'm just a common thief." "Hush, hush, my boy. Those are ugly words. How could you rob your own house? How could you take what is already yours? This is all yours, my son, as wholly yours as is my great love. You don't doubt that, do you?" That soft voice, her warmth, her fragrance broke through his chill, and he felt as though all of his strength were leaving him. He held on to her and he groaned, "Oh, Mother, life is hard. Life is so hard." And she said nothing back. She just held him. Ah, the assurance of safety in that warm embrace. Then reality set back in. "I don't see how you can look at me or speak to me." But she whispered softly, "This is my right, my son." When he was calmer, she said, "Now come with me into the library, and I'll have your dinner brought there." When dinner came, he nearly fell upon it. And as he ate, she told him all that had happened during the years he had been gone, how his father's business had brought them to Chicago. "I was glad when we came," she said. "I thought you might drift west, and I felt closer to you here." There was a sadness in her voice. When he'd finished, she led him to the chairs by the fireplace. He sank into the depths of the big leather chair where he had sat so often in the days when his feet didn't touch the floor. The chair seemed to speak to him of things long forgotten, like the touch of an old familiar friend. He felt a sudden yearning for the happy little boy who had sat there and dreamed of the big world so long ago. He sat looking up at this magnificent woman who was his mother. He remembered how proud he had been of her as a boy when she would come to see him at school. "Oh, Mother, you must feel that I owe you an explanation. There are things I ought to tell you before I can accept your confidence like this." "Oh, my poor boy, does it matter? Have you wandered so far and not yet learned that love has nothing to do with pardon and forgiveness, that it only loves and loves and loves?" And she leaned over and kissed him on his cheek. He sighed a long sigh of rich contentment. And as the chimes rang joyfully outside, and sleep pressed heavily on his eyelids, he wondered if the author of this sad little riddle of ours were not able to solve it after all, when the dawn shall break. This is why God came to be born in Jesus, to show his love, which loves and loves and loves, and to provide his pardon and forgiveness. Christmas is so much more than a celebration of kindness and generosity, of family gatherings and meals shared. Jesus came for everyone. God's love is for everyone, and there are no exceptions. May you live in and out of this love, not just tonight and tomorrow, but every day and in every way. Amen, and a blessed Christmas to you all.